And this is Graham.
And we are your hosts for the Pelicast. This is episode 1.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And this today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible, if you haven't heard from it, get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Pelicast. For real, though, I listened to... which Game of Thrones book was it? I listened to one of them. I think it was...
Is it Winds of Winter?
That's the one that's not come out yet. It was Feast for Crows.
No one's read that book.
Oh, man, you gotta read these. They're great. But I listened to it because I had something like a 16-hour car ride one time, and I just listened to it. That was about like 1/10 of the book, because listening to it on tape will take forever. But anyway, for all you guys, if you want to listen to some Audible, you know, some audio books, check this out. Free trial, free audiobook download, 30-day free trial. It's nice.
Real simple.
Real simple.
All right, now let's get talking about the Pelicans.
The Pelicans.
Man, it's been an up and down season for sure. Mostly recently down. Yeah, mostly down. Yeah, definitely mostly down. But you know, the perfect epitome of that is the Pelicans losing to the Nets and giving up 143 points with Anthony Davis playing. And then coming back around and defeating the defending champs without Anthony Davis playing. So that's the Pelican season in a nutshell. What do you think?
I mean, you said it as well as I could have. It's just, you know, they got to the expected outcome. You know, they went 1-1 over the stretch, just like everybody thought they did. They just were stupid about it and lost to the team they really should have beat, and then beat the team they really should have lost to.
Never want to take the easy way around.
Never want to take the easy way with the Pelicans.
But I mean, it was good to grab a win against Cleveland. I mean, like we heard Alvin Gentry call out the effort, the coaching, everything. I mean, I think to quote him, he said everything was shit, and I don't think I could disagree with him there. But then you know they come out 2 days later and put up that kind of effort against the defending champs with a home crowd that was, you know, pretty heavily populated with Cavs fans, I must say. So that was definitely a sweet, sweet win. It was good to see them respond like that.
And that's something that was their MO this season, was fix the effort, fix the attitude, fix the defense. And that's why so many people were upset with the Nets win, and why so many people were ecstatic with the Cavs win. Because even though they did give up, I think what was the final score of the Cavs game? It was like 120-something to 120-something.
Yeah, like 124 to 122.
Yeah, like they gave up a bunch of points, but the defense, you know, fought hard against the, you know, Cavaliers team that, I mean,
they were firing at all cylinders. Like Kyrie put up 49.
Kyrie, I don't think he passed coming up the court for like 10 straight minutes. He just jacked up 3, 3, 3, 3, and they all went in. It was unbelievable.
Oh, man. And like LeBron had a triple-double, of course, and Kevin Love had a good game. I mean, it reminded me of the game, I think it was a couple years back when we were in Cleveland, and, you know, AD was doing his stuff, and Ryan Anderson was just on fire. But the Cavs' big three did what the big three does, like Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron, like all putting like 30 apiece and like finally beat us like at the end of the game. It kind of reminded me of that one where like their big three was just firing on all cylinders, and we just couldn't match them blow to blow, and somehow we did this time around.
Yeah, you got fourth quarter best nickname of all time, Greenlight Galloway, coming in. I think he was 3 of 9 on the night, and all three of them were fourth quarter threes.
When they count, of course.
Yeah, of course. Guy's money. Love that guy.
Have we heard about if they're putting him in the three-point contest yet? Because I'm pretty sure that's a huge campaign going on down here.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything. I don't think he would or will get in. But you never know who's going to go, who's going to drop out, who gets injured. You know, they said today, you know, Buddy, they announced the Rising Star Challenge. Buddy Hield getting in the game. Legitimately excited for
Buddy
this guy.
Buddy Buckets.
But he also said if anybody's, you know, dropped out of the three-point contest he once first dibbed on getting in.
For which, sure. I mean, you got to have at least one home crowd boy in the contest. Like, you can't.
You would think
not.
So. It comes down to Buddy. If Buddy turns the buckets,
yeah,
game over, man.
I think that's sort of the hope, at least for me as a fan. I obviously can't tell you what the front office thinks, but Buddy is gonna be the key to sort of unlocking the offensive end. And you can see that, like, you know, he does create space while he's on the floor, but like, as of now, that's his only offensive value.
Yeah, and they're focused on his development. I don't care what anybody else says. You look at his numbers, like the minutes he's played, people are like, oh, he should be playing more. It's like, no, he's getting the amount of minutes he needs, and he's with the starting lineup playing against other starting lineups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he's since he had like a short stretch where he wasn't getting minutes, but like since then he's among the leaders in rookies in minutes, and honestly he's among our leaders in minutes this season.
And they actively look to get him the ball. Like, oftentimes, and when after the opening tip or at the beginning of quarters or from out of timeouts, they run a play just for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they have him come off a screen. They have him, you know, either set a pick down the court and then come off another screen or something like that for a three, or curl around for a mid-range jumper. Whatever it is, they try to get him that look or put him in a position to create a play. Just to sort of get him going, and I like that. I like that commitment to him, that they give him that trust. Like, hey, like, we want you to take the first bucket and open up the game for us. We trust you to make that shot.
Yeah, Buddy, and I just looked this up. Four players who, and this is since December 4th, when Buddy got put back into getting minutes. Since then, with players with more than 50 three-point attempts total.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy has the fifth highest three-point percentage in the league.
That's crazy.
46.2. You know, so he's killing it. But also, he's like the only one in the top like 50 to have a field goal percentage lower than 42. But he's still killing it from behind the arc. So, and he's confident. He'll grow. We'll see what happens next year. He really looks like a rookie. He's got his couple things that he does well, and then that's it.
And like, not to blame the refs or anything, but I think there are definitely times that they don't give him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to driving. I think he does get draw some contact when he drives to the rim, and
yeah, a couple times
because of his lack of explosion and him being a rookie and all that. Like, he may not get a call that someone else might get. But yeah. I think that'll come. That is an area I would like to see him develop, though, is getting to the line. But then you can say that for literally any player on the Pelicans outside of AD.
That's something I don't think is going to happen just because he's a jump shooter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, moving on.
Stretch the past couple of games where his minutes have been slightly inconsistent, but other than that, like, you know, it's, he throws up a shot and I expect it to go in. Like, that's where it's gone.
Yeah, and it's crazy for someone who literally can't do anything inside the arc to still be that effective.
Yeah, it's kind of painful to watch him trying to create off the dribble.
Oh my gosh, he had an open three against the Cavs the other night, and like, I forget who it was, but someone was just, like, standing under the net and was like, you know, throw me the ball. And Buddy wanted to shoot it so bad, but he hesitated, so, like, the moment was gone for the pass and for the shot. And then he, like, kind of drove. It was just really ugly, and I think he threw it out of bounds or something. It was bad.
Ah, Buddy.
Buddy.
But
he never, ever loses confidence, I will say that.
Yeah, and that's huge. It's something we didn't necessarily see with Austin Rivers, you know, way back when.
Hey, Austin's a 40% free throw, 3-point shooter this year.
Austin's been good this year, especially like this last few games. I think like over like the last 10 or something games, Austin's averaging like 20 points a game, shooting like 45% from three. He's been good. He definitely has a place in the league.
I'm so salty against former New Orleanians doing well because it's just happened a lot. God. The Eric Gordon thing, we don't even need to talk about it. You mention his name, I just get angry.
Well, and then it's like it's also driven with a narrative. It's like, oh, Ryan Henderson's having a career year. It's like, is no, he though? He's not no, having he's not. A career year. He's in a really good system that is perfect for him. I'm happy that they're doing well and they found their roles there. But like, yeah, you're definitely right. It rubs me the wrong way when people are like, oh, they're having the best years ever, and it's like,
And like some of them I'm happy for. Like Peja Stojakovic and Tyson Chandler both left and got a ring in Dallas.
Oh, that was amazing.
Which was great. And Birdman got his wrongs righted.
Hey, J.R. Smith got a ring.
J.R. Smith got a ring. There's a lot of former New Orleans players who went on to have a lot of success. David West is still chasing one. I don't know if he's going to get one. Honestly, that'd be hilarious because he jumped ship from the Spurs after 1 year to go to the Warriors the next year.
Especially because like he's on record earlier in his career saying like, man, those guys are ring chasers. I'd never do that.
Oh my! He passed up like a 4-year deal.
Yeah.
For I forget how much it was.
Like $448 or something like that.
Oh my God! That's like more than. That's like what Solomon Hill got.
Yeah. Solomon Hill money, and you know that's a lot of money.
Solomon Hill money. That's a lot of money.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk to you about the Cavs game a little. Do you think the way they responded, do you think that was a fluke? Do you think that this is signs of things to come? Like, Drew played phenomenal, but do you think, like, is this going to be the turning point in what has been maybe, like, a slightly disappointing year for him on the offensive end? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, God, I hope so because, I mean, I wrote about Drew last year. I got a couple things out there that he's just – it's like career lows. He's career low from the field. His 3-point percentage is nice. It's back up, yeah. But he's not finishing at the rim.
And he's largely creating for himself on the three. I don't think much of those are catch and shoots.
No, and that's the way it's always been. He doesn't do a lot of off the ball stuff with us because if he's off the ball, then who the hell is on the ball? But I hope so because last year he was. It's really just the Nets losing to the worst team in the league, beating the defending champs. Drew Holiday, last year was a career offensive year for him. This year is a career low offensive year for him. It's unbelievable, like the flip-flopping that this team does. You know, last year we're a good offense, bad defense. This year, bad. I don't know, I got that backwards. But either way, you know what I mean. But I think at some point something's going to give with Holiday and his numbers are going to tick back up. But it's just about, you know, how much, whether it'll have a positive impact on the team or not, you know, or is it going to, because a lot of it's been just an indecisiveness on his part is what I think his offensive struggles have been. Because last year, coming off the bench as a gunner versus this year running the offense, you could see at times he's unsure of what he should do. And you saw last night or the other night, Monday night, against the Cavs, he took on that role because Davis wasn't there, and he didn't have that number one guy in the totem pole he had to look out for. He had to just go out there and score. So if he can kind of take that mentality going forward, you know, it'd really help us because this team needs someone to kind of step into that role. So hopefully he snaps out of it. I'm just not sure if it actually is a turning point or not.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, he's young and, like, you look at him over the years and, you know, his career in New Orleans, offensively, I think he's seen a steady progression until this year. But, and that may be, you know, due to the fact that he's maybe playing with the worst offensive teammates he's had ever. But, you know, he's gotten better every year on offense when he's been in New Orleans. And that includes facilitating, that includes, like, protecting the ball. And just, you know, efficiency for himself. I think he's become a smarter, more well-rounded player. So, you know, there is that promise that, yeah, he can be really effective on that end. On the flip side, you know, like last year and maybe the year before, but particularly last year, like his defense, you know, he was living off his reputation. I don't think last year he was that great of a defensive player. Like he'd be out of place a lot. He would gamble. You would see him, you know, be inattentive at times, while other times he'd be completely in a frenzy. He'd be frantic. So it was like hot and cold with him. But like this year, I think his has been like his masterpiece when it comes to defense. I think this year he's been unreal on that end. And particularly, like, I can't tell you how many times, like, we switch him on to larger guys and they come up empty over and over again. Like, it's just fascinating to watch him on that end.
It's amazing. He really is. Him on the defensive end is really something. And it's part of it, he's a huge part of the turnaround. And it's part of the reason that I think you can't let him walk.
Did you know that he is 98th percentile in isolation defense this year?
Jeez.
98%. People are shooting 20% when Jrue Holiday guards him in isolation situations. And if you like do like the filter for like minimum number of possessions and stuff, for possessions that he's guarded, or like the minimum number of possessions that he's guarded, that grades out the best in the league. Like that's absurd.
Yeah, for guys who have defended as much as he has, yeah. There's no one better.
And he forces a turnover on those one out of five possessions, like 20-22% of the time, almost one out of four. You know, like it's crazy that he's been that effective in isolation.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons that I'm still like optimistic about this Pelicans team, and I think if they can hold on to Jrue, that's one of the reasons. And people are like, "Well, you can't overpay him." And it's like, "Well, you're gonna have to overpay him." You know, I mean, that's just the reality of it. You can't just let, in the span of 2 years, a rookie of the year in Tyreke Evans, depending on what happens with him,
mm-hmm.
A guy like Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, a most improved player, and then Jrue Holiday, a former All-Star, walk out the door for absolutely nothing in a period where they just passed a CBA that's going to make it that no superstars ever hit the free market.
Especially when you consider what they gave up for him and other people. Yeah. But like, especially what you consider. Like, not to say like that should ever factor. Your prior mistakes shouldn't factor into your current decision making. But like, it hurts a bit when you're like, I got nothing to show for this.
Yeah, and it's not even just like a past mistake factoring in. It's literally like, what do you have factoring in? Like, we don't have anything. You let him walk out the door, that money's not going to go towards equal talent, you know, the money that we'd save from letting him walk.
No, not at all.
Not at all. So I hope they bring him back. Because the other thing that's with this team is the whole identity thing. The team doesn't know who they are. And then this year, they've just tried to really reestablish that on the defensive end. And to a measure, it's working pretty well. And you're going to let your number one defender walk out the door. No, it doesn't work for me.
I don't think so either. I think, like you said, there isn't someone on the market that, one, we can acquire with the money we have, two, that would actually even want to come here. So if you let him walk out the door, you're committing yourself to maybe the Tim Frazier's of the world as your starting point guard for I don't know how long, and maybe a rookie that you draft. But you still, you know, you have so many holes on the roster. Jrue fills one of those holes, and if you let that walk, you're creating another one. And I don't think that solves anybody's issues, especially not Anthony Davis, who wants to win. I mean, he is one of the best 5 to 10 players in the league right now, and why would you want to waste all that talent competing for lottery picks?
Yeah. Yep.
Continue to surround Jrue and AD with defensive guys because you want to be good on that end. And credit to Darren Erman, and credit to Gentry too, because you got to have the players buy in, and the players have bought in. You see players like Terrence Jones starts one day, next day he's off the bench. Dante Cunningham is asked to guard LeBron James one day, then he's asked to guard Joakim Noah. Like, you know, the players have to buy into guarding all these mismatches, guys that are way bigger than they are, or smaller than they are, quicker than they are, whatever it is, the players have bought in, and that only they have to do that for the switching scheme to work. And so credit to them, credit to the coaching staff for getting the players to buy in.
But anyway, getting back to the games that we were talking about, at least versus the Nets and the Cavs, the real big swing games. But something that I wanted to at least talk through, because I haven't had a chance to talk it through with any intelligent Pelicans fans yet.
Calling me smart? We have the most intelligent fan base in the world.
Twitter doesn't really do it for me. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. But, anybody who's followed the Pelicans, you know, has seen kind of they've implemented this heavy switch defense, and you kind of saw both sides of it. One, the Nets, where we would switch everything and then lose every individual matchup, but then against the Cavs, who have know what they're trying to do on offense, you know, or they know who they are. You do a kind of this switch type of defense, and it kind of mucks up a lot of their sets or a lot of what they want to do. And like we were talking about earlier with Drew, you know, he gets switched on the guys in the post and just stops guys he shouldn't be stopping. And then, you know, another guy, shout out Etuan Moore, because I love this guy.
I love about him in the offseason. I'm so happy we signed him.
Low key, he just comes up with defensive plays all the time. He blocked LeBron last night, like, in the post. Another guy just winning an individual matchup. He's good. Etuan Moore's good. But anyway, like...
He averages, like a block per game if you go, like, per 36 or something like that. He's great. He comes up with so many on-the-ball blocks, and they're just clean. And you're like, this dude is, what, maybe 6'3". He's not a guy that, like, jumps out of the gym, but, like, just puts his hands up there, and the guy, like, doesn't even get the shot off. Like,
he's extremely solid. I love this guy. But, what are your thoughts on just, like, what they've done with the defense? I give a lot of credit to, you know, what Darren Erman has done, and, like, I think it'd be a shame if, like, our entire coaching staff would be let go this season, after the season or something, you know, after they've kind of just now finally implemented a top 10 defense. And it is a top 10 defense. Everyone tries to discredit it, but, I mean, the numbers show what the numbers show, man. What are your thoughts on this going forward?
Obviously, I'm a big fan, and I think going into this season, their goal was to make the team better on the defensive end, and you can just look at that based off who they signed in free agency. I kind of wrote about this, but I think, you know, over the years, they are like, we know what happens if you put out Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon and all those people. We know we can put up points. What we don't know is we've never had a good defensive team around AD, and how much of that lies on AD, how much of that lies on the supporting cast, we don't know what that variable was. So what they did was they were like, all right, we're just going to put a bunch of defensive people next to Drew and AD and see what happens. Hopefully the offense can work. I think that was their gambit, was that Drew and AD will be able to produce all the offense you need, while the rest of the guys can just sort of lock down a D and make open shots. And while the offense gambit, I think, has failed, the defense one has been a success, and I think that starts from the personnel. Some of the interviews, I think, you know, you look at Langston Galloway and Solomon Hill, those guys were like, yeah, we were brought in to play a powerful defense, and Solomon Hill was like, I was brought in to be our number one defender. And so I think this team is clearly a defense-first team, and that's what their identity is. But I don't know if it's enough to put you in contention for anything more than the 8th seed than where they are right now.
Yeah. I think for anything more, they need an offensive creator. But
the game is always going to be about buckets.
Buckets.
Get buckets. I get buckets.
So for those of you who don't know, we are recording this on the night of January 25th. The Pelicans have a game in just a few minutes against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And for your viewing pleasure, I have looked up some January 25th stats.
Dun, 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 dun. What stats are these, Graham?
Fun stats. Okay, we're gonna do. We'll do best and we'll do worst.
All right.
January 25th. Guess how many players, Pelicans Hornets history in New Orleans, have scored more than 30 points on January 25th.
In the history of the Pelicans?
Like, that doesn't go back that many years,
like,
but yes.
Till like 2002, 3, whenever. 30 points or more on this date?
On this date, 30 points or more.
3.
No.
Am I off in the wrong, like, which, am I like too low, too high, hot, cold?
Too many.
Too many? Oh, wow. Too many. How high is it, two?
No. It is one.
It's one.
According to Basketball Reference, the only player to have scored more than 30 points on this date is Drew Holiday on this date last year.
In a losing effort to, was it, who did we play this time of year? I'm going to guess. Was it an Eastern Conference team? And nope. Okay. All right. Never mind. I give up.
Houston. I remember this game because Drew was beasting all over James Harden, but came up short. He had 32 points, 9 assists, and 6 rebounds, shooting 61.9% from the field, and just all around killing it.
Right.
So, Drew Holiday.
Let's hope for a repeat.
Good on ya.
Back-to-back 30-point games.
That would be really nice. Switching to worst performances, I have 3 highlighted here because they all came in the same game.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. So, for those of you who don't know, basketballreference.com has their own little game score stat here where it's like basically, you know, did you suck or did you not suck kind of stat. Did you positively impact the game or negatively impact the game? And there's 3 players in the top 5 of negative game scores. Or I guess I should say 3 players in the bottom 5 of game scores for the history of the Pelicans Hornets here. And they all came in the same game. Now, I'm not going to ask you to guess because I'm sure you wouldn't be able to. But
James Posey.
No.
Xavier Actually, Henry.
That's a good guess. He's not even looking. That's him. Oh, no. Xavier Henry is number 8. 8 worth.
Oh.
8 worst.
Wow, there's people worse than him?
Yes. Can you guess any more? There's a couple you should know.
Am I guessing the right position?
Let's see. Xavier? I don't even know what position have these guys
wing,
are. Kind of. Yeah, guard, smaller forwards. Yes.
Mo Pete
is not.
All right. This is going to be my last guess. Aminu.
Nope.
Damn it. Okay.
Yeah, these are too hard because you wouldn't even know. Number 1, worst performance happens to come from my favorite Hornet of all time, Speedy Claxton.
Speedy Claxton. Definitely would not have guessed that.
27 minutes on January 25th, 2006, against the San Antonio Spurs.
27
In those 27 minutes, he shot 0 of 7 from the field and had 2 assists. That's it. And a couple rebounds. And he had the worst game score in Pelicans Hornets history. The then Hornets lost this game to the San Antonio Spurs 84-68.
Jesus.
The 2 other players who played in this game, who had the 4th and 5th worst game scores, were Desmond Mason.
Oh my God.
Who shot 2 of 9 from the field. In 28 minutes. And Kirk Snyder, who shot 1 of 6.
Wow. And this is a game. They got 27 and 28 minutes apiece. Jesus, that's a lot of minutes.
It's pretty bad.
But you know what? I have some. I think we are in line to probably one up that tonight. How many shots do you think Solomon Hill is going to miss?
Solomon Hill never really misses that many shots because he never really takes that many. So I would say he misses – I'm going to say he shoots 2 of 5 like he does every night.
That's probably a solid guess. Yeah, I mean, there was that other night that, like, Dante went, like, 0 for 7. But, like, that's about as bad as you'd get. But it
Dante
feels a lot worse.
Dante is the second best player on our team. Based on net rating.
Based off net rating.
It's like, pause. Based off net rating.
Yeah, we should. That's why I question our decision to bench him for our game versus the Thunder.
Oh, look at this. He also has the exact same true shooting percentage as Jrue Holiday, 51.8. That's cool.
I've always said we should trade AD and build around Dante. But
Dante is a stud. There was a really nice piece up the other day about how he really enjoys fishing in the New Orleans, Louisiana
area. Yeah, I read about that. He was like, yep, you know, I love trying everything outdoors once, and this is perfect for me because the weather's great and I can go fish and get away from the people. This is, he's like, I did ice fishing one time in Minnesota, and that sucked, but I'll do anything once.
Yeah. Yeah, he took, from that piece, I forget who it was, but he took one of somebody who was in the Pelicans training camp.
Sean Dawson. No, wait.
Sean Dawson. He took him out hunting, and Dante Cunningham gutted a pig in front of this guy. Can you imagine going to try out for a team and, like, meeting up with one of the players, like, hoping to have, like, a nice time, and then just having the, like, horrifying experience, the bloodbath that is a pig slaughter.
This is initiation. Welcome to the NBA.
You know, I bet he made our team and turned down the offer.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Like, that is horrifying. That's hilarious.
Okay, so speaking of Dante, if you're the casual fan, you pull up Dante Cunningham's stats, right? Mm-hmm. You look at him, you're like, oh, man, he has a PER of 8.4.
He does.
8.4, which, you know, by the way, is a career low. And you're like,
you know, I think he's better than that.
Right.
That should be
high. And, you know, like, he scores, you know, 6 points a game, shooting 40% of the field. But he is shooting a really nice 38% from three, which has been a great development in this game. Not that anyone guards him out there, but it's pretty nice.
He can pay.
But, yeah, and you look at him, and none of the stats really, like, paint him as a player that's worth having on a team. But when you watch him, it's the opposite. You're like, this guy hustles. You see, like, highlight chase down blocks like he's LeBron. You see him dive on the floor. Like, he does all the little things that, like, don't show up in these stats. So, like, my question to you is, do you think Gentry is using Dante appropriately? Do you think he could be used better? What's your take on that?
I mean, I don't think he could be used better. I don't think he could be more than he is. And frankly, he's been pretty good for us. You know, I don't think we make the playoffs in 2014-15 without Dante Cunningham, mm-hmm. mid-season pickup. I don't think he should ever, and I will say this, be a starter, even though he's starting for us. Like, you know, if we want to be a playoff team, not a
we're
team
something
that
like 9-5 or something absurd that, like, when he starts, it's pretty
no,
funny.
No, when he starts, we have like a very, and this is over like a, almost like a month now, probably more than a month, that we've gone small ball, and he's got an extremely good, like, rating. Like, when he plays, we play well.
Yeah, especially since, like, Tyreek's been back, it's been, like, absurd. He's, like, a plus six, and it's, like, when he sits, the bench is, like, 10 points worse, and it's, like, holy shit, it's, like, plus 16.
Yeah. But there are, like, a number of guys on this team who, like Dante Cunningham, like Etuan Moore, and, you know, like Solomon Hill, if he can find a shot, that could really be system guys for us. And as they do, as the team searches for its identity, there are a couple guys here who I think will help establish it. Whether it's the identity of a crappy team or a good team, I don't know. But they will like these are guys that can contribute in this system and improve. And you've seen it from Dante over the years. He is still who he is, but he has improved within our system. I think the same thing will be said of Solomon Hill, and Etuan Moore fits in with that perfectly. You got some good pieces that you could put around talent if you could get talent, you know. And Dante serves his credit.
I agree. You got a bunch of role players, like, just ready for that second or tertiary star, whoever that may be behind Drew and AD. You know, if you're, this is never going to happen, it's a pipe dream, but like, let's say you're Gordon Hayward this summer, and you're looking at rosters you can fit on. Like, does this not look like an enticing situation in the sense, like, hey,
no, it doesn't.
Hey, man, let me live this fantasy out.
It doesn't look enticing at all. It's like, yeah.
You don't want to be part of a 15-win team?
Or? I could go there and I could make Solomon Hill look good.
Yeah.
That's totally really enticing. But it, like, if he did, like, if we were somehow to manage to get that guy, I think we would look good. Yes. But
yes.
I'm sure there are much more. I'm just going to cut your dream short because it's not going to happen.
Damn.
You know what we do need? You know, screw Gordon Hayward. We need to bring Lance Stevenson back.
Is he healthy yet?
There were reports that he's, like, aiming at...
later.
I thought it was
month.
The end of January, actually.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, maybe he is healthy.
I'd be down for that.
I mean, shoot.
I'd be down
we
for that.
We need an offensive creator at the... he could play small forward, kind of.
I'd be down for that. Lance was, like, already getting... like, he was, like, the end of training camp, last day pickup over Alonzo G., And he was, like, by, like, game three, he was, like, getting, like, 35 minutes a game. So it was, like, that's what kind of, like, sorry state we were in.
There was, like, a two-game span where he and Buddy Hield play really well, and it was, like, everyone was digging it.
Yeah. And he was, like, he took on the mentor role to Buddy. Like, I don't know if you follow him on Snapchat. He's a great follow. But, like, he'd always be snapping about, like, the Rook and Buddy and all that kind of stuff. It was pretty great.
That's another reason why this identity thing, like with Solomon Hill, like he went down to watch Check on Check Diallo in the D League.
Gosh, I hope he turns into a star so we can rename this podcast to Check on Check.
Oh, man. Copyright. Is that, can you do that? Can I just say copyright and it's ours now?
Restricted.
Is that how that works?
Dibs. There we go, dibs.
Dibs. Done. No backsies. No Nazis. Anyway.
But speaking of like a third guy, one of the guys I've always thought would be a good fit on this team and sort of coveted for a while, mostly because we've never had a small forward, is Danilo Gallinari on the Nuggets. He's a free agent this summer. Do you think he's a realistic target? Do you throw the max at him?
God, I don't think we have the max to throw at him. We'd have to renounce Drew and Tyreek's cap holds, I think, to have the max. And then if you renounce Drew, you can't sign him into your cap. Or so you'd have to sign him into your cap, right?
Yeah. So what we'd have to potentially do is we would have to. If you want to keep Drew's rights, he'd have a cap hold. So his cap hold would be about $17 million. And then you'd renounce literally every other free agent. You hope that Galloway, Jones, and all them, whoever has opt-out decisions, they opt out. Dante, I think. You hope they opt out. You definitely have to move Ajinsa. You'd stretch Oshik. And I think you might get, like, in that $23-25 million range by then. And if not, like, if you were really, really desperate, you could move Etuan Moore.
And what the hell is the max now anyway? Is it 22, 23, or is it, like, 50? Is that just what a max is now?
For Gallinari, it's probably going to be, like 30, like, close to $30 million a year.
Like, I would not max another injury-prone player for this team, no. But I would give him a hefty salary.
Would you give him Ryan Anderson money? 80 mil, 4 years, 80?
Yes.
Okay. I'd give him Ryan Anderson money for sure.
That's Ryan Anderson. So Ryan Anderson's at 4 years 80?
Yeah.
So my dream of bringing Drew back at like 4 years 80 is probably not going to happen.
No.
Shoot. Yeah, that just occurred to me that like Drew's going to get paid.
We're going to have to sign whoever in whatever cap space we can create and then use Drew's bird rights to go over the cap. That's going to have to be the play.
It's going to be interesting.
And you're going to have to, the whole time, you're going to have to tell Drew, hey, just wait for us. Don't sign anywhere else. We'll give you any offer you want, basically.
Well, it's there. So, and this would be our last topic here that I had down for us. Any way that we would make a trade for this, you know, there is an ongoing embarrassing race for eighth place right now.
Embarrassing?
Is there any way?
It's heating up. The Sixers are in it. Yeah. Oh, you're talking
they're
about
not
the West.
Even. I'm talking about ours. Yeah, I swear to God. I was thinking about putting money down on them making the playoffs just for funsies.
They process the Clippers without the process. In Blake Griffin's game back. Like, that's. There's something going on in Philly.
No, that was Nerlens Noel game, all right?
The Nerlens Noel. Like, I have trade value game.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, but no, yeah, like, if you. Like, maybe we could make a trade for Gallinari, in which case I think we would have his rights. And then we could sign both him and Drew, you know, going over the cap. But, like, is there. Right now, we're in it with about, like, you know, eight other teams. Like, every single team that's not. That's in the eighth place and down is, like, within, like, six games of each other. And just to remind people, we were about four or five games out of the playoffs at this point. When we made the playoffs. So we're actually closer than we were in 2014.
We were like three games out of the playoffs, like 50 or 60 games into the season. Like, that's how close. Like, with OKC, had like they would go on like a three game win streak. We'd go on like a two game losing streak and they'd be like,
Phoenix,
oh no.
Phoenix was in it until they blew up their team or whatever. They actually, I looked it up. I wrote about this the other day. They were 26 and 19, and both us and OKC were 22 and 21, and so they had like a four game lead in the win column over both of us.
And then they like traded for Brandon Knight.
Yeah, which was just
Brandon Knight.
Brandon Knight. Could Brandon Knight help the Pelicans?
No. No. Brandon Knight, I mean, not like, first of all, his contract's atrocious. It's like 70 mil. And he has like 4 years left on it or something absurd like that. His contract's terrible. He is another oft-injured guard who is relatively positionless. He doesn't have the playmaking to play a one. He doesn't have the size to play the two.
This guy sounds perfect. I don't know. Are you trying to sell him to me?
Oh, yeah. If you look at his RPM stats, he is amongst the worst players in the league by far.
Well, I mean, I think this year is not an accurate rendition of
He's
Brandon
also
is.
Never been, even remotely close to a positive player in his career.
Yeah, but he's just not – he's not the worst. He's better than the first,
the New Orleans,
right?
Pelicans, they're not the worst.
Eighth place, it's all right. Yeah. Who do you think, if you had to put money down on who would get eighth place in the West right now, who would it be?
I want to say Portland.
Really?
I want to say Portland just because...
Portland's like the bottom two for me.
I feel like their major issue is defense, which is a giant issue. But I feel like they got the star power to get it done. CJ and Lillard can win them games. It's between... Like, I don't want to be biased, but like, you know, if you look at how we've done... We've been around a 500 team... since Drew's comeback, and maybe like slightly better than that since Tyreek's comeback. So like, you take away that 2-13 without Drew Holiday, it's like this wouldn't even be a race. I mean, it'd be a race, but like we'd be a comfortable 8 seed, you know.
Well, so the Portland Trailblazers were about a 500 team a 500 team to start the season, about the around the same stretch that we were crappy, and then they've been horrible ever since. And they, and even recently, they haven't put it together really. So I don't really see them getting fixed anytime
soon. Yeah, like, and then there's a thing, like, I think this time last year they were like 21 and 25 or something like that. They were like below 500. So you're right. I think Denver is then again is like the most potent threat. Just because they got a bunch of like solid rotational players, and if they figure out how to use them, like
I watched that Denver Jazz game the other night, and the Jazz. Well, the Jazz were missing Gordon Hayward. So it's not like they're at full strength, but like Denver's offense could not be slowed down. It was amazing. They have
Nikola Jokic.
That scares me about them is that they have the league's worst defense, but they have a better offense than like Houston and Golden State. Like they actually have found something they are elite at, and when you actually have an elite skill that you can like kind of cling to, that's what scares me.
Yeah.
So I think Nuggets scare me more than Portland.
And
I actually am a little bit concerned that the Mavericks are kind of just going to beat everybody out for this terrible race.
I'm not.
Like, this race for the eighth is, like, emblematic of the game that they try to play. Like, Rick Carlisle is trying to slow every game down as much as he can, make it as ugly as possible, and somehow come out with the win. And he's really good at it. And since they've been healthy recently, they have been the best team of the group.
I just don't think that health is going to last much longer.
I don't think it will either.
Plus, I mean, yeah, it's like which piece of crap from this pile of crap is going to be the team? And it's like,
yeah, and so you would go with the veteran heavy Dirk team that's only missed the playoffs once in the last 15 years. So that's what that's why I'm worried about them.
So speaking of Brandon Knight, he is ranked 433 out of 440 players in
sign him up
in ESPN's RPM. And trade the players worse than him are all rookies except for Ben McLemore.
I will give you our unprotected first round pick for Ben or Brandon Knight.
They should make you RGM.
Yes.
I don't think anyone would notice that Dell Demps was no longer the GM.
It's not like he ever appears or says anything. When was the last time he made a statement?
That's a good question. Even like Benson's made a statement more recently. Like Loomis.
Yeah, Benson was in a photo op the other day when they announced Davis as the starter for the All-Star game.
And Loomis talked about the Pelicans yesterday. He's like, I don't do anything with them. What are you talking about?
Yeah, people are all up in arms about this. Pelicans fans, like, don't yell about this if you don't even know what his role should be or if you want him to have a role or really what he does. People are mad at this, and they don't even know why. It's just like, oh, he's the vice president of basketball operations. I'm like, that's just a title.
That's
like,
upsetting. He's
probably just like you could, if you replaced VP of basketball ops with outside consultant, like no one would be upset. That's really what he is.
Yeah.
And like, but I don't know. I don't know what he does. And then he says he doesn't really do that much. Do you want him to do more? Like, what do you want?
He Who just signs has a the title. Checkbook?
He just gets paid. Yeah, he signs a checkbook. Do you want more people in the front office? Like, state clearly what you want from me, but
yeah.
All right, so don't bitch about it on Twitter if you don't know anything about it.
I mean, we just all need something to scream about because
there's plenty of other things to scream about besides Mickey Loomis.
But sticking with this crawl for the eighth seed, I think that's one of the reasons we haven't really seen an active trade deadline yet. But I do think that trade deadline is going to be sort of the pivotal moment for all of these teams, like, to choose, are we all in for the playoffs or not? Based on the Pelicans' history, do you think after the trade deadline we will be the proud owners of our 2017 first-round pick?
I don't even want to think about it. Yes, but I think that we will make some kind of move, whether big or small.
Okay. Okay.
It just doesn't think. I don't like.
I think. I don't know. You should continue, and then I'll speak my thoughts.
I don't know. I just think that they wouldn't give it up unless they got an offensive creator back for it. Like, they were linked to – it doesn't matter what position. Like, they need someone who can create offense, and then that fits in with our defensive identity. And, like, all of a sudden we have a top 10 defense and a passable offense that doesn't have to run through Anthony Davis 24/7. Yeah, but, like, they're not going to find that for our first-round pick, and it's not like we have the assets to trade for it. Like, they were linked to – Will Barton, and I think that'd be like a good move, but you look at it, it's like then you're pushing Buddy to the bench, and all of a sudden you have to choose between Moore and Galloway to stay on the team because you don't need all those guards, and you know. So
well, do you think, here's a question. Do you think Tyreek can turn back into a guy that we can rely on for offense?
No, I was actually going to say.
He's going to be on the team come this deadline?
Like, I think he's the most likely to be moved.
Salary-wise, he makes the most sense. I mean, he's an expiring $10 million salary.
Yeah, like, I like Tyreek, but if they're going to make a decision, like, based on, like, establishing something, they need to trade him because it doesn't work. Like, and it does kind of work, but it doesn't. You know, you saw it against the Cavs game, like, there are times when it works, but times when it doesn't. Like, it's not consistent throughout a game, let alone the whole season. Like, he was part of the initial... I think it was a three-point game, and then with him out there, no starters out there, they bumped it up to a 13-point game, and then like Drew came back in and went up to 20 before half. But then the second half, there was like a moment where we got two offensive rebounds, so we had three possessions where Tyreek didn't pass the ball and took a terrible shot, and it's like that's not surprising, and that's not something that I see changing in the future.
I saw somewhere someone had said, like, Tyreek is, like, the role-player version of Westbrook. Like, you live with Westbrook making stupid taking and making stupid shots because that's Westbrook, and he can do a lot of other things. With Tyreek, it's like he kind of takes over and hijacks your offense in the same way, but is not nearly as productive.
Oh, it's not, and it can be. Like, there is something there. There is something there. He's got a persona that people can feed off of, but at the same time, it's not consistent. Like, yes, we made the playoffs with him as our offensive guy. Like, that happened. We were a 45-win team with him, him as our offensive, running our offense.
Despite all of our injuries.
Despite all the injuries. Like, there is something there. Like, he's a talented player, and I like Tyreek Evans as a player, but... Like, I don't see how they can justify keeping him around or just letting him walk away for nothing, because I doubt they'd be able to re-sign him this summer unless they overpaid him. And I don't think they want to do that if they're not going to hand over the keys to him, and they're not going to do that. So
no. It just makes sense. He's going to be another player we're going to see on some team coming off the bench and doing really, really well. And he'd be like, yeah, I'm more open to coming off the bench now. And we'd be like, God damn it, Tyreek. Like, why couldn't you do that your career here?
I know. It's just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But you're 100% right. It's just – it's going to happen. Just get used to it. Yeah. But that I think they need to just find a taker for him. Like, take what you can get. They couldn't get anything for Eric Gordon, but they could have gotten a first-round pick for Ryan Anderson. It might not have been a good one, but they could use it now. Like, they need something. Yeah. They need something. They could package it in another deal. They could flip it for something else. I don't know. Get what you – even if it's like 2 seconds. Shit. Ish Smith got 2 seconds, and we turned those into check, and people like check. You know, at least that makes – you know, you can kind of keep it rolling. I don't know. But
well, I think
it's got to move in.
I think that I'm going to bet on the opposite side. I think we are going to trade our pick. I think we're going to go all in – I think we're going to use Tyreek to facilitate whatever trade we're making. Salaries are going to go in and out. And I really think a guy like Gallinari or some other small forward is
going to be... I would be okay with that. I'll say, like, if we packaged... And we don't have to package Tyreek to trade with Denver, by the way, because they're so far under the cap that they can just kind of take anything they want. Because I think they're under the line. Oh, well.
Yeah, they were, like, waving and acquiring Mo Williams to, like, do cat gymnastics.
They were just – they just sign, wave. Like, how why not do that for me? Why not just sign me and waive me? Yeah. You know, if you're just going to pay someone for no reason, they weren't really going to pay him.
Like, it's just like your salary's on the books and now it counts towards a total. So, but like, they would pay him like a day's worth.
That on my resume. I could put that I was an NBA player.
Yeah, just give you a fake contract for $1 million and just waive you immediately.
Yeah, and don't pay me any of it. You know? That'd still be pretty cool, though. Do it for like a, you know, like in the, they have like a billion rounds in the MLB draft and they just start drafting like, maybe like a Make-A-Wish kid.
Oh, gosh.
Put that on your salary cap. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I think there's like teams that have done that before, like one-day contracts.
Yeah. Do that. That'd be cool. Mo Williams doesn't need that. He's chilling. But anyway, like if we were going to trade our first-round pick for someone like Gallinari, who is an offensive creator at a position of need, hell yeah. Like, I'd do it.
Yeah,
and that honestly should put us in the playoffs this year if they did that like before the deadline. But
we shall see.
We shall see.
Maybe there'll be a trade by the next time we do this podcast.
Maybe.
Well,
last question, I guess. Last question. Mm-hmm. How valuable is our like Philly pick? We have this Philly pick that people are like, oh, it's a deep draft. Late seconds are basically.
It's getting worse every day that they do better. So
that's true.
So
trade it now.
Trade it now. Yeah, no. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be between 30 and 40. Teams have gotten good players in that range. I mean, recently you look at Brogdon, you look at Norman Powell, you look at Draymond, Festus. You know, it's possible. Is it likely? No. Can it be used to net us something else, grease the wheels of another trade? Sure. I think it has value. I wouldn't consider it one of our better assets, but I mean, it has value.
Word.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I don't think that pick ends up in a Pelican uniform.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because I'm curious. Because I think that's more of a, what would you call it? A sweetener.
Sweetener.
Heel sweetener. Yeah.
Some Splenda.
Well, Splenda, doesn't Splenda cause cancer?
That might be an alternative fact.
shit. I need a fact checker. I need to make enough money to hire a fact checker, like, person next to me. I need to hire a smart person to walk around with me and tell me when I've been taken prey by my own stupidity.
You know, you could save all that money and just never talk.
Sounds good. All right. You got anything else?
No, I think that's good.
I'm done talking.
No, I think that was good. This has been great. And I guess until next week.
Until next week.
All right. Well, thanks for listening in.
All right, Falcons fans. You stay classy.